Hello and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday the 5th of March 2024. My name's Simon and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers chosen by Dyshaw and Malini Ladd and read by Ali Proven and Malini Ladd. Margaret Simpson, MBE, also has a message for you. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here is some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
Hello, listeners. I have a question or two for you, posed by the editor of the Oxford Mail, an Andrew Coley. This question is important to Oxford volunteers too, because we collect the news items each week from the Oxford Mail to produce Ox Talk. What the editor is asking is, which news items interest you most? What do you prefer to hear about? And, more importantly perhaps, what is missing from the newspaper? How can the Oxford Mail be more interesting for you? Please send your answers to me, Margaret, using the usual email address or the phone number that's given out at the end of this recording of Ox Talk. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you.
Staff at Bank in Oxford have donated their time to support the Oxford Children's Hospital charity. Oxford Metro Bank staff helped by packing 500 runner bags for the OX5 run participants. This annual running event is the largest fundraiser for the Oxford Children's Hospital. Oxford Metro Bank colleagues Grant Shergold, Huma Redman, Jasmine Massey and Marvish Mirza loaded up essential items and goodies into each of the bags. Oxford local business manager Grant Shergold said, "The OX5 run is not just a race, it's a symbol of hope and solidarity for the children and families served by the Oxford Children's Hospital. This has reinforced my belief in the power of community."
Residents in West Oxfordshire are being encouraged to prepare for the upcoming District Council and Police Crime Commissioner elections. Voters are advised to ensure they are registered, have applied for postal voting if required, and have the necessary identification ready ahead of May the 2nd. those looking to vote must be over the age of 18 and registered in their residing area. Some eligible voters who are not registered, perhaps due to recent relocation or voting for the first time, are reminded that they will not be able to cast a vote if not registered. People can register to vote online via the government website. Registered voters will receive their poll cards at the end of March, and provided the card is accurate, there is no need to reapply. The final date to register for voting is April the 16th. Voting by post may be an appealing option for residents seeking to participate in the local elections from their home's comfort. Residents can apply to receive their vote by post before the application cut-off at 5 p.m. on April the 17th via the government website. A national insurance number is mandatory for the application, and existing postal vote arrangement holders need not apply. Another voting alternative is appointing a proxy who, upon appointment, will need to present their own valid ID when voting on behalf of the elector. Proxy voting applications must be received by 5 p.m. on April the 24th, and the application process can be carried out on the government website. Voters are also encouraged to ensure they possess an accepted photographic identification. Acceptable IDs include UK, EEA or Commonwealth passport or photo card driver's license, and some concessionary travel passes like an older person's bus pass. Expired IDs are also accepted as long as the voter can be identified by the photograph. If the names on the ID and the one claimed at the polling station differ, additional proof of identity might be required. Free ID can be obtained online by anyone who does not have the required forms of ID, or via a paper form available from the council. The last day to apply for voter authority certificate is 5 p.m. April the 24th. Giles Hughes, returning officer for West Oxfordshire District Council, said, "With District Council and Police Crime Commissioner elections on the 2nd of May 2024, it's important that those who want to vote make sure they're registered, have applied for a postal or a proxy vote, or if they prefer, to ensure they have an accepted form of photo ID for voting in the polling station." He added, "It may seem early, but applying now means you will be ready to vote in May and won't risk missing the national deadlines."
An Oxford restaurant has temporarily closed for a major interior refurbishment. Heat African Bar and Restaurant in Cowley Road has been serving a variety of African dishes and drinks since February 2020, but closed earlier last month. The hotspot has had builders in for several weeks, completely renovating the inside of the business, including the bar, kitchen and seating area. Restaurant owners Mohammed Bello and Kevin Dalton decided to make the renovations after 4 years at the venue. "The restaurant is temporarily closed for refurbishment," said Mr. Bello. "We intend to revamp the restaurant into a contemporary African seafood and grilled house with unique Afro high-end cocktails. We are increasing the size of the kitchen and bringing in more kitchen equipment to ensure efficient quality and consistent service. The restaurant will operate on bookings only, and we will only accommodate walk-ins if we have available tables. There will be changes to the menu at Heat as a result of the revamp, while the nightlife events will also alter. We will be serving seafood and grilled dishes infused with African spices all night until 1 a.m., added Mr. Bello. "There will also be light Afrobeat entertainment provided and unique Afro high-end cocktails to our dinners. We intend to open as soon as possible. No date has yet been set for the venue's grand reopening after 3 weeks of work. A teenager has been arrested on suspicion of causing grievous bodily harm with intent after an incident near a college. A 16-year-old was left needing emergency surgery after an alleged assault in Oxford city centre near the back of the City of Oxford College. Following the incident on January the 24th in Paradise Square, a second 16-year-old boy was arrested on suspicion of causing GBH with intent. He has been released on bail. A Thames Valley Police spokesperson said that investigation into the incident was ongoing. The college has been approached for a statement following the incident.
Oxfordshire campaigners marched on Parliament calling for compensation for women who lost out on years of state pension payments when the retirement age was raised. Women expecting to retire at 60 were told they would have to wait longer when changes to the state pension age were accelerated in 2010. In 2018, the retirement age for women rose to 65, in line with men. Many women made big life plans based on when they thought they were getting their state pension, which then proved to be wrong, leaving them in financial hardship as they waited extra years to receive their pension. WASPI women, the Women Against State Pension Inequality, argue that they were not given enough time to prepare for the changes, and they say the Department for Work and Pensions failed to communicate them properly, so some women were completely in the dark. Research conducted by the WASPI group suggests that 3.6 million women, mostly born in the 1950s, had their retirement plans thrown into disarray. Since 2015, 269,329 WASPI women have died waiting for pension compensation. An independent investigation was launched by the Parliamentary and Health Service Ombudsman, the PHSO, 5 years ago, and the group are expecting a key decision on their fight for compensation in March or April. WASPI said, because of the way the increases were brought in, women born in the 1950s, on or after April the 6th, 1950, to April the 5th, 1960, have been hit particularly hard. Significant changes to the age we receive our state pension have been imposed upon us with a lack of appropriate notification, with little or no notice, and much faster than we were promised, some of us have been hit by more than one increase. Women were given as little as 1 year's notice of up to a 6 year increase to their state pension age, compared to men who receive 6 years' notice of a 1 year rise to their state pension age. Many women report receiving no letter ever, and others say letters were sent to the wrong address, despite notifying the DWP of the address change. The DWP said the government decided over 25 years ago that it was going to make the state pension age the same for men and women. Both the High Court and Court of Appeal have supported the actions of the DWP under successive governments dating back to 1995, and the Supreme Court refused the claimant's permission to appeal.
Six flood warnings were in place over last weekend, with water levels remaining high across the county. The warnings include the Thames at Abingdon, where the Environment Agency says flooding of property, roads and low-lying land is expected. Areas most at risk are properties on Bridge Street, East St Helens Street and St Helens Wharf. However, peak levels are not currently expected to be as high as those seen last month. A warning is in place for the River Wey at Islip, with flooding of low-lying land, roads and possibly property, especially in areas closest to the river in Mill Street. A historic coin pressed in Oxford is up for auction next month and is expected to sell for thousands of pounds. The rare item is an Oxford half pound, which dates back to 1643 when it was created in the city's mint. It depicts King Charles I on horseback, crowned and in full armour, raising a sword, while on the reverse is the abbreviated form of Charles's oath made at Wellington in September 1642. This is when he declared that he would protect the Protestant religion, the laws of England, and the liberty of Parliament. Oxford enters the story in 1642, after Charles I lost control of London during the Civil War and moved to the city in November. He took over Christchurch College as his royal residence and billeted his soldiers throughout the city. The university was supportive of the royalist cause and donated its silverware to Charles, and the king had set his mint up in September, in December. This was at Newin Hall, the present site of St Peter's College, and was stocked with a considerable amount of silver from Oxford and Cambridge colleges. Covering Charles's need for coinage in his war effort, the Oxford Mint was a hugely successful enterprise. Experts estimate the coin to reach between £4,000 and £6,000 and have even suggested that it may even fetch more. The special and valuable coin will be going under the hammer at Baldwin's Auction House in London at 10 a.m. on March the 7th.
A soul group will be coming to Oxford later this year as part of their UK Greatest Hits tour. The Stylistics tour will visit Oxford New Theatre on November the 22nd, which will be one of 25 UK shows the group plays. The band will be playing songs including Can't Give You Anything But My Love, I'm Stone in Love with You, You Make Me Feel Brand New, and You Are Everything. The Stylistics said, performing live is where we come alive, and we can't wait to share this experience with you all. Tickets are now available, and prices range from £33 to £37, plus booking fees. Fans can secure their tickets online, via Ticketline, or directly from the venues.
A wildlife park has celebrated the leap year by breeding beautiful and rare frogs that have been labelled the new Spice Girls. Cotswold Wildlife Park, near Burford, has welcomed the arrival of tiny cinnamon froglets, named after their intense orange colouring. The attraction claims only one other zoo in the whole of Europe has managed to breed these tiny amphibians, which it describes as its very own frog version of the Spice Girls in the last year. Inspired by their spicy name origins, keepers have called the animals after spices. The first to emerge have been called paprika, cayenne, saffron, chipotle and chilli. The unique frogs originate from Southeast Asia in Thailand, Singapore and Malaysia. Reptile keeper Megan Howard said, "The frogs possess a completely unique sound, which according to the park are small peeps that don't sound like typical frog calls at all. Their unpulsated notes sound more like insect calls, according to scientists, who say they have one of the most unique and diverse calls in the amphibian world." Ms. Howard managed to film the froglets calling to each other in adorable videos. She said one froglet in particular shows a great interest in the camera and is not at all shy about being photographed. The froglet, affectionately nicknamed Ginger, after its namesake, regularly jumps on the camera lens when keepers try and take its photo. The real Ginger Spice, Jerry Horner, owns an estate near Banbury and visited the park a few years ago with her family. She got on so well with all the keepers, they invited her to name a then newly born zebra foal, whom she called Jerry. The Cotswold Wildlife Park and Garden exhibits over 260 different species of animals. The park is set in 160 acres of landscaped parkland and gardens south of Burford. Oxford Brookes University has received a delivery of 135 oxen models, which will be part of an art trail in the city. The oxen will eventually form part of Ox Trail, a citywide art sculpture event set to launch on July the 6th. The oxen, which are a variety of sizes, are to be spread across Oxford after being decorated by local artists and schools. The statues were delivered to the university's Harcourt Hill campus by 30 squadron team based at RAF Brize Norton. On February the 28th, the university hosted a special event allowing participants to collect their oxen. The 30 large oxen will be displayed around the city, while the smaller models will be placed in groups at various locations for 8 weeks in the summer. The sculptures will be auctioned off in early September to raise money for Sobel House Hospice. In a move encouraging community involvement, Oxtrail's learning programme, sponsored by Oxford Brookes, will offer schools a variety of educational resources. The Oxtrail project, supported by more than 80 schools and community groups, is projected to reach more than 37,500 young people. For further information, visit the project website.
The first giant tunnelling machine, Florence, of the HS2 project, has completed its 10-mile journey beneath the Chilterns, marking a significant milestone for the rail development. The tunnel boring machine, TBM, weighed 2,000 tonnes and is one of 10 machines excavating the 32 miles of tunnel for the new railway. The HS2 is designed to link London Euston with Birmingham, reducing travel times between Britain's largest cities and making way for more additional local services on the West Coast Main Line. Two identical TBMs, Florence and Cecilia, were used to create the twin bore Chiltern Tunnel, stretching from the south portal located near the M25 to South Heath in Buckinghamshire. Cecilia will complete her journey in the coming weeks. Rail Minister Hugh Merriman said, "This groundbreaking moment for HS2 demonstrates significant progress on the country's largest infrastructure project, with Florence paving the way for faster, greener journeys between London and Birmingham." He applauded the hard work and dedication of the 450-strong team facilitating a rail line that will transform rail travel for generations to come. Designed specifically for the geologic conditions beneath the Chilterns, each TBM excavates the tunnel, lines it with 56,000 precast concrete segments, and grouts them into place at a rate of 16 metres a day. This feat of engineering is matched by a team of around 17 people per TBM, running in shifts to keep the operation moving 24/7. On the surface, more than 100 people manage logistics and ensure the smooth operation of the tunnelling project. Sir John Thompson, HS2 Executive Chairman, said, "Today is an incredible day of HS2, and I'd like to thank the hundreds of people who've worked so hard over many years to make it happen. We've still got a lot of work to do, but historic moments like today really underline the huge amount of progress that's been made and the fantastic engineering skills we have on the project." Alliance Project Director Daniel Altius added, "The mining of the tunnel is a fantastic achievement for not only the Align Tunnelling team, but also the Earthworks team, who've managed to chalk excavated from the tunnels and placed on site. Approximately 3 million cubic metres of chalk and other material have been repurposed in the creation of a grassland restoration project at the South Portal. This includes the development of 127 hectares of new landscaping, wildlife habitats and biodiverse chalk grassland. The breakthrough comes a week after HS2 publicised research showcasing the potential for a 10 billion economic upswing for the West Midlands over the next decade, chiefly due to increased development around the two station sites.
To mark the 80th anniversary of D-Day, the largest air and seaborne invasion in history, Witney Town Council is looking to uncover the stories of locals who were involved. The council is aiming to unearth the personal histories of people who were on the front lines, as well as the experiences of their families awaiting their return. The community is being encouraged to contribute their own D-Day tales for the council to use as part of their commemoration events. Any stories, whether from those who were present at the time or handed down through generations, can be shared with the council, who themselves will share the stories with the public through social media, digital signage and at exhibitions. Tower Hill Cemetery houses a Commonwealth War Memorial grave of a local hero, Lance Corporal Harold Simpson. His brigade launched from Warsash on June the 5th, 1944, landing the next morning on Juno Beach. The landing craft his troop were on caught on beach obstacles and they were unable to get close to shore. They attempted to swim and once ashore, 48 commandos proceeded to Langrune-sur-Mer, which was eventually liberated. However, Lance Corporal Simpson was killed, aged 26. For further details, contact the town council. The Queen of Mean, Anne Robinson, has revealed how she gets irritated by tourists browsing in shops near her home in the Cotswolds. Ms. Robinson recounted how her way was blocked by three very large Germans at her local cheese shop in Burford. "I got past one daughter and the mother while the other daughter was leaning over the glass in front of the cheese display taking photos," she told the Daily Mail. "Wouldn't it be better if you bought some cheese instead of just photographing it?" I demanded. "I already buyed it," she said. Bought, I retorted. The teenager behind the counter then whispered, "Are you a teacher?" She added, "I've yet to witness a tourist doing anything but browse. They never purchase." Former host of The Weakest Link, Ms. Robinson, 79, is known for her cutting catchphrase, "You are the weakest link. Goodbye." She then went on to host Channel 4 quiz show Countdown, becoming the first woman to take the role before stepping down in 2022 amid media reports of a growing rift between her and co-host Rachel Riley. Ms. Riley dismissed reports of a feud. Ms. Robinson is reportedly in a relationship with the Queen's ex-husband, Andrew Parker Bowles.
A UK charity has announced its fundraising 10K event will be coming back to Oxford for a 42nd year. Muscular Dystrophy UK has launched the Bidwell's Town and Gown 10K series for 2024 with events held in Oxford and Cambridge. This charity event raises funds for those living with muscular dystrophy, a group of muscle-wasting and weakening conditions, and has so far generated more than 2 million since its launch in 1982. The first event of the series is the Bidwell's Oxford 10K, set for Sunday, May the 12th in Oxford. It will be followed by a sister event in Cambridge on Sunday, October the 6th. Last year, Muscular Dystrophy UK announced a new partnership with Bidwell's. Bidwell's, a property consultancy based in Oxford, has pledged its support for Muscular Dystrophy UK and will not only be title partner of 10K races, but will also join the events with its own team of runners. Jessie Keeley, Events Project Manager at Muscular Dystrophy UK, said, "We're really proud that the Oxford 10K is heading into its 42nd year and that so many people want to get involved in the event. We'd like to say a huge thank you to them for pledging to support both the races and people living with muscle wasting and weakening conditions." The Oxford Town and Gown 10K was sparked by a local boy, Daniel Cleaver, who lives with muscular dystrophy. The event began as a fundraiser for Muscular Dystrophy, and until now, all profits contribute to Muscular Dystrophy UK. Jez Wells, the captain of the new college team, an Oxford 10K participant for approximately 20 years, said, "The new college team will be running again this May, raising much-needed funds for a great charity." Bidwell's will take added responsibility in the form of calculating and offsetting the carbon footprint for both 10K events, thus ensuring they're carbon neutral. Alistair Blackmore, head of sustainability at Bidwell's, said, "These events are not just races, they're a celebration of resilience and community spirit. By taking this action, we're not only supporting Muscular Dystrophy UK, but also demonstrating that it's possible to conduct large-scale events in an environmentally conscious manner." 5 years ago, Muscular Dystrophy UK allied with the University of Oxford to establish the MDUK Oxford Neuromuscular Centre, which is now one of the leading centres for muscular dystrophy research in the UK. You can find out more about Bidwell's Oxford 10K and sign up on their website. General entry costs £32 per person or £21 for runners who commit to fundraising £75.
International Women's Day will be marked by the University of Oxford with a celebration of women in music. The series of events on March the 7th will highlight the achievements of women in the music sector and address the ongoing issue of their underrepresentation. The programme consists of three parts, showcasing female industry professionals, successful music creators, and promising academics. It will also provide exclusive interactive workshops discussing contemporary industry challenges and prospects. Apple's Elena Segal, Glastonbury's Emily Evis, and Music Week's International Woman of the Year 2023, Gulnar Khosrowshahi, will form an expert panel at a Women Leading the Way event. The Future Hitmakers Masterclass, facilitated by Girls I Rate, will see songwriters and producers such as Carla Marie Williams, Katie Melua, Miranda Cooper and Jinjin sharing personal insights and guidance. A new restaurant offering a revolutionary dining concept is set to open in Oxford. Six by Nico has applied to Oxford City Council for a premises licence for a restaurant on the roof terrace of the Westgate Shopping Centre. The chain run by Scots-Italian chef Nico Simeoni offers diners one option, a brand new six-course tasting menu served every 6 weeks. Each menu is themed on a place, memory or idea, with Mad Hatter's Tea Party currently on offer. Six by Nico restaurants are now established across the UK with 17 venues in 10 cities. If approved, the licence will allow sale of alcohol, live and recorded music between 10 a.m. and 1 a.m. daily, with opening hours of 10 a.m. until 1:30 a.m. daily, and late night refreshment between 11 p.m. and 1:30 a.m.
South Oxfordshire and Vale of Whitehorse District Councils are changing the way they charge for garden waste services from 2025. The change introduces a permit sticker system to identify customers who have fully paid up. The stickers will be sent out once customers pay for the service annually, allowing waste collection crews to identify which bins need emptying. This scheme is used by many other local authorities, including neighbouring West Oxfordshire. With the new sticker system, the authorities hope to ensure that only subscribers that have paid for the service get their garden bins emptied. Garden waste subscriptions in the districts currently run on an annual direct debit system from the date customers sign up. From 2025, the councils will cease to accept direct debit payments. Instead, customers will need to make an annual payment using a debit or credit card. This will standardise the payment year, running from April 1st through to March 31st. The councils will contact all customers directly via letters and emails, reminding them of the changes and urging them to renew their subscriptions. An online system that enables customers to manage their accounts and alter details more easily will be adopted. Councillor Sue Cooper, South Oxfordshire District Council's Cabinet Member for Environment, said, "We offer a garden waste service as we know over 31,500 households in South Oxfordshire value this optional service. It also contributes to our excellent recycling rates, where only this month South Oxfordshire has been ranked as the top recycling district in England. The new permit stickers will help us to make sure that only those who pay for the service actually get collections, which we think is only fair, since this is an opt-in service." Councillor Mark Coleman, Vale of Whitehorse Cabinet Member for Environmental Services and Waste, said, "Our popular garden waste scheme currently serves nearly 28,000 households in the Vale. As with all council services, we regularly review what we offer and strive to make sure our service is the best it can be. I'm confident the new permit scheme, combined with introducing online customer accounts, will make our garden waste service even better for everyone. Customers will receive details of the changes and payment options along with this year's invoices. The council's customer teams will also be available to address any queries regarding the change. Residents in South Oxfordshire were recently ranked as the best recyclers in the country, with residents in the Vale a close third, according to a government league table."
A new jobs fair is coming to Oxford this March, taking place at Oxford Town Hall on Wednesday of next week. The event aims to bring together job seekers and a host of employment opportunities at both local and national organisations. The event will give people the chance to explore a variety of different career paths and interact directly with HR managers. Attendees will gain insights into company culture, open roles, and opportunities that they might not be aware of. Head of Operations at Job Fairs Limited, Sean Heppenstall, said the Oxford Jobs Fair is an excellent opportunity for local job seekers to explore the various career avenues available right now. We are committed to fostering diversity and inclusivity, and this event allows us to connect talented individuals from the local area with actively recruiting employers. The job fair will feature 25 employer stands from different sectors, providing opportunities to interact with HR managers, improve interview skills and first impressions, and connect with numerous brands all at once. The event welcomes experienced professionals, recent graduates, or anyone actively seeking employment to explore the opportunities on offer. It will take place from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and more details can be found on JobFair's website. The proportion of women in Oxfordshire on long-term contraception fell following the pandemic, new figures show. It follows the national trend, with the figures revealing 9% fewer women had access to long-acting reversible contraception in 2022 than in 2019. MSI Reproductive Choices, a non-governmental organisation providing reproductive health care, said while COVID-19 added pressure on healthcare services, many of the issues go back even further, with sexual and reproductive healthcare severely underfunded. Office for Health Improvement and Disparities figures show 58.7 per 1,000 women in Oxfordshire aged 15 to 44 were prescribed such contraception in 2022. This includes the non-hormonal copper coil, hormonal coil, and the hormonal implant. This was down from 62.3 in 2019 and a drop from 59.3 per 1,000 women the year before. The figures revealed a disparity between the most and least deprived groups nationally, with the rates at 36.6 and 53.7 respectively. A gap of 17.1 per 1,000 women. In Oxfordshire, 44.9 per 1,000 women aged under 25 and 60.6 per 1,000 women aged over 25 cited a form of LARC as their main method of contraception in 2022.
The administrators of Body Shop have announced the closure of a further 75 shops and said that 489 people will lose their jobs. The original Green Beauty brand is closing its shops in Banbury and Didcot. The chain revealed earlier this month it had fallen into administration, putting more than 2,000 jobs at risk across 200 shops. Administrators from FRP Advisory said the latest closures will take place over the next 4 to 6 weeks as part of a heavy restructuring aimed at preserving the brand. Joint Administrator Tony Wright said, "In taking swift action to right-size the Body Shop UK store portfolio, we've stabilised the business and are providing the best opportunity for this iconic brand to have a long-term sustainable future. The UK business continues to trade in administration, and we remain fully focused on exploring all options to take the business forward."
Mark Thomas, Social Inclusion Lead at Oxford United in the Community, reflects on United's first home disability game and how the first team made it a week to remember. One aspect of football we often discuss in the community hub of Oxford United's operation is how powerful the badge of any professional or semi-professional club in any sport can be. The presence of a club crest can bring out the best in people and prompt them to make positive changes to their lives by taking on new challenges, learning skills and developing self-confidence. At Oxford United in the community, we see this positive impact every day, be it through our half-term holiday camps, which operated last week. Our work in partnership with HMP Bullingdon and the Twinning Project, or Monthly Manor Club, for the over-50s events. One tangible example of this power translating to participants took place quite literally a stone's throw from the training headquarters of Des Buckingham's first team when we organised the first home fixture for United's disability football team against Northampton. Results on the day were secondary, although both teams produced some outstanding goals and defensive performances which certainly caught Des's attention, who was pitch side to watch the matches. Personally, having led our disability football sessions since they launched in January 2023, three elements stood out to me most. The first being personal development and how players have improved skills which can be applied on the pitch, such as agility, balance and coordination, things which are easy to take for granted. Secondly, teamwork and communication. Our disability squad has bonded and grown stronger as each week has passed, and the change in players' confidence is really noticeable. Lastly, the spirit and emotion of playing. None of the above would have been possible without the support of our key partners, Abingdon and Whitley College, who have been instrumental in the programme's success. We're grateful to Lee Humber and his team for their support in delivering the programme. It goes to show what's possible when adopting a one-club approach which prioritises equality and enjoyment for everyone connected to the United badge, regardless of how big or small their role might be. Mark Thomas, Social Inclusion Lead for Oxford United in the community. The Cotswolds has been named among the most beautiful places to live in the UK for 2024. The list, compiled by a website aimed at people aged over 50 called Rest Less, has revealed the country's prettiest spots in which to settle down. The list features locations from the beaches of Cornwall to the remote isles of Scotland, and singles out the Cotswolds, which includes parts of West Oxfordshire. The compilers said, when thinking about moving, whether it's to retire somewhere new, or simply for a change of scenery, most of us would prefer to go somewhere beautiful. Few things can rival the feeling of waking up every morning and being grateful for where we live. Luckily, the UK is home to some of the most beautiful and diverse landscapes in the world, from snow-capped mountains to white sand beaches and ancient woodlands to rolling hills. But you might be wondering which places in particular are some of the most inspiring to call home. Rest Less put together a list of the most beautiful places to live in the UK. The top nine most beautiful places to live in the UK in 2024, according to Rest Less, are Pembrokeshire, the Lake District, Cornwall, Isle of Skye, Northumberland, the Cotswolds, County Antrim, North Yorkshire, the Shetland Islands. Restless said that the Cotswolds is widely celebrated for its beauty, including hundreds of picture-perfect villages and pristine countryside. It said, encompassing six counties and hundreds of picture-perfect villages, the Cotswolds is one of the UK's most visited areas for a reason. If you love village life and enjoy a community feel while being surrounded by pristine countryside, it's difficult to think of a more idyllic spot. There are so many beautiful and historic Cotswold villages that selecting the loveliest is tricky. But Gloucestershire's Boughton on the Water is often voted one of the prettiest villages in England. Nicknamed the Venice of the Cotswolds, it's home to honey-coloured cottages, quaint tea rooms, gorgeous gardens, and elegant stone bridges that arch over the photogenic River Windrush. For some, the touristy nature of the Cotswolds can be a bit off-putting, especially if you prefer a quiet life. But while places like Stow-on-the-Wold and Burford do get busy, there are plenty of other more peaceful, quintessential Cotswold villages that are just as beautiful. The twin villages of Upper and Lower Slaughter might be small, but they're home to some of the most romantic streets in the country and the unspoilt countryside and landscape gardens that surround them will likely take your breath away.
Eating ultra-processed foods, UPFs, such as sugary cereals, fizzy drinks and ready meals have been linked with 32 harmful health effects. UPFs are usually higher in fat, sugar and salt and contain chemicals, colourings, sweeteners and preservatives that extend shelf life. An umbrella review conducted by academics in Australia analysed 14 review articles published in the last 3 years, which associated UPFs with poor health outcomes. These included 9.9 million people with data on exposure to UPFs coming from the likes of food questionnaires and dietary history. The team graded the evidence on convincing, highly suggestive, suggestive, weak or no evidence. Based on convincing evidence, a higher UPF intake was associated with a 50% greater risk of death from cardiovascular disease, a 12% greater risk of type 2 diabetes, and a 48 to 53% greater risk of developing anxiety. There was also highly suggestive evidence that eating more UPFs could increase the risk of obesity, type 2 diabetes, sleep problems, and dying from heart disease by 40 to 66%, as well as a 22% greater risk of developing depression and a 21% greater risk of death from any cause. Researchers said that the evidence between UPF intake and asthma, gastrointestinal health, some cancers, and intermediate cardiometabolic risk factors remains limited and warrants further investigation. Previous studies have linked UPF to poor health, but no comprehensive review has yet provided a broad assessment of the evidence in this area. Some experts not involved in the research highlighted that much of the research included in the umbrella review was weak and also cautioned that the findings do not prove cause and effect. As reported in The Guardian, Dr. Chris Van Tulleken, an associate professor at University College London and one of the world's leading UPF experts, said the findings were entirely consistent with prior works. He explained there was now an enormous number of independent studies which clearly link a diet high in UPF to multiple damaging health outcomes, including early death. We have good understanding of the mechanisms by which these foods drive harm, he added. In part, it is because of their poor nutritional profile. They are often high in saturated fat, salt, and free sugar. But the way they are processed is also important. They're engineered and marketed in ways which drive excess consumption. For example, they're typically soft and energy dense, and aggressively marketed, usually to disadvantaged communities. Changes are set to be made to two bus services in Oxfordshire starting this month. The alterations will be made to Stagecoach West's S7, Whitney Woodstock Oxford, and S4, Banbury Deddington Kidlington Oxford services from March the 10th. These changes aim to improve punctuality and service accuracy for passengers in Oxfordshire. Following a November consultation with Woodstock Town Council and Oxfordshire County Council, it was determined that buses would no longer use Woodstock Market Place to turn. This resulted in a diversion compounded by ongoing roadworks and general traffic congestion, which impacted the service's timing dependability. Therefore, the S7 timetable will change to more accurately reflect journey times now that the extension in Woodstock has been made permanent. The S7 will no longer serve Woodstock in the evenings, although late-night links between Woodstock and Oxford will still be available on the S3 service. The service modifications also include a reroute of the S7 that will now start and finish at Magdalen Street. It will no longer go through the city to serve George Street, Park End Street or Oxford Rail Station. In light of these alterations, the S4's evening operations will experience slight shifts to continue regular schedule intervals with the S7. Interim Managing Director Elizabeth Tasker said, "This combination of changes will provide a service which more accurately runs to time, improving its reliability and bettering the experience for our valued customers."
Homes on Oxford's Botley Road were flooded with sewage as Thames Water's ageing system struggles to cope with heavy rainfall. The utility company confirmed yesterday that rainfall in the past week has caused the sewer system to overload. Engineers have been on site with a tanker to try to pump away the sewer water, which has been escaping from manhole covers and drain covers. Annie Blows, who lives in Botley Road, said sewage was pumping out of the drains in her laundry room and across her garden. "You can see it's full of loo roll and all sorts. It's terrifying to think about the health risk. Outside in the street, sewage water is leaking from drain covers and forming large puddles. It has been fountaining out of a manhole cover in the middle of the Botley Road. Sewage water is also pooling in the Waitrose service area." When Ms. Blows contacted Thames Water about the problem, the company sent an engineer to take a look. He explained they had to make a decision about whether to flood us, the vets, and the other few houses in our row, or risk 300 other houses. "It makes sense, but doesn't help when you're the sacrifice." Ms. Blows added, "Some notice would have been good. We could have moved our appliances and furniture, but as it is, everything's damaged." Liz Sawyer, also living in Botley Road, said her family has had to stop using their downstairs toilet because it flushes away so slowly. Ms. Sawyer, who is a member of the Flood Action Group, Oxford Flood Alliance, said, "There have been bubbling drains and inspection chambers in the area for weeks, even when the water was lower than it is now." Ms. Sawyer added, "Although river levels are high, we have seen them much higher in recent years without this problem. The system seems to be under pressure in a way that hasn't happened before. This is deeply worrying. Thames Water is contributing to the budget for the planned Oxford Flood Alleviation Scheme, OFAS, because the company believes it will help reduce these sewage leaks caused by ageing infrastructure. A Thames Water spokesperson said, "We have responded to reports of both internal and external sewer flooding on Botley Road in Oxford over the past week. Our engineers have found in this instance the heavy rainfall caused our local sewer system to overload, resulting in diluted wastewater to escape from nearby manholes. We have had a tanker at the site to pump away excess flows from the manholes to prevent them from overflowing, and have also arranged for an extensive clean and investigation of our sewers to identify any obstructions which may be disrupting the flow in the area."
Dennis Maskell, who has died aged 92, will be remembered by many as footballer Danny Maskell. With his adopted first name, he was part of the team which brought fame in the 1950s to Headington United, forerunner of the present-day Oxford United. He was the left winger in the team that completed the double in the 1952-3 season, winning the Southern League title and the Southern League Cup. The following year, he was one of the stars in the United team, which fought its way through to the fourth round of the FA Cup to face mighty Bolton Wanderers. In the 1952-3 season, he and his teammates, under manager Harry Thompson, suffered just 3 defeats in the final 30 games to pip Merthyr Tydfil on goal defence for the Southern League title. They also beat Weymouth 4-3 on aggregate to lift the Southern League Cup that year. But the biggest triumph came when the following year, when they earned national headlines with a great FA Cup run. United faced an away tie with 3rd Division Millwall in the second round. They earned a 3-3 draw before a crowd of 20,000, with goals from Bobby Pitt, Ronnie Steele and Danny. Ken Smith scored the only goal in the replay at Headington's Manor Road ground, from Danny Maskell's beautifully placed free kick. The team had waited 60 years to beat a Football League side in a competitive game, and it took them just 4 weeks to claim their second scalp. Stockport County, also from the 3rd Division, were the victims, Pitt scoring the only goal in a replay at Headington. That set up a fourth round tie with 1st Division Walton Wanderers, with 16,670 spectators squeezed into the tiny manor ground at Headington. There was hardly space to breathe. Headington lost 4-2, but won widespread praise for their performance. The Oxford Mail was full of admiration for the battling home side, and also praised fans who, with their rattles, bells and hooters, produced a real cup tie atmosphere. He later recalled, "We were paid £14 a week in winter and £12 in summer, with £2 extra for a win and £1 for a draw." Born in 1931, at the height of the Depression, he grew up in Mountain Ash in the mining valleys of South Wales. Strangely, it was his school music teacher who spotted his footballing talents. After national service, which took him to Eritrea, he played for Watford before signing for Headington. On a trip back to Wales, he met his future wife Marion. They married in 1957 and moved to their first and only home in Gordon Close, Old Marston, Oxford. Throughout his football career, he enjoyed the company of family and friends. He loved music, history, photography, snooker, gardening, cycling and swimming, and had a long-standing affiliation with the Royal British Legion. After retiring from football, he worked for 40 years at the press steel car body factory at Cowley. On his 90th birthday in 2021, Oxford United players signed a card and Watford sent him a shirt with the signatures of their current team on the front and Watford 90 on the back. Mr. Maskell died on January the 20th this year. The funeral at Oxford Crematorium was led by the Reverend Francis Grant, interfaith minister at Headington. donations in his memory went to Thames Valley Air Ambulance. Mr. Maskell leaves his wife Marion, son Graham and daughter Jane.
South Oxfordshire residents are guaranteed quality and cost-effective local services following the approval of the 2024 to 2025 District Council budget. As part of the budget, £500,000 will be allocated to support various community projects aimed at improving residents' quality of life, enhancing local facilities and boosting action on climate change. Additionally, £60,000 will go towards supporting the arts across South Oxfordshire, with £405,000 earmarked for improvements at the Cornerstone Arts Centre. As a result of budgeting and targeted investment in council operations in past years, the district finds itself in a financially positive position. The council did not consider any reductions to services, allowing services like the council's community hub to continue providing support for residents. The budget includes an increase in funding for homelessness prevention, money to support expanding the housing team, and support for active communities. Significant investment is planned for social housing as part of the council's capital budget. Also on the agenda is the decarbonisation of leisure centres, expected to minimise energy usage and consequently reduce ongoing expenses. The council tax for 2024-25 has been set at £146.24 annually for a Band D property. This means that South Oxfordshire residents will continue to pay one of the lowest rates in the country for District Council provided services. The council tax assists in funding numerous services, including household waste and recycling collections, community support, leisure services, parks and public toilets, housing services, planning services, environmental health and licensing. Councillor Peter Paul Barker, Cabinet Member for Finance and Property Assets at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "Despite the major challenges we continue to face, including funding rises that are below inflation, the cost of living crisis and ongoing economic and political uncertainty, we continue to maintain positive finances and provide quality local services and support for our communities." He added, "Following approval of the 2024-45 budget, we can now build on our successes of the last year and help even more people to lead active lives and continue to help those who are struggling financially. We will also continue to work with our partners towards delivering more affordable housing, improved local infrastructure, and on local projects that help to reduce emissions and tackle climate change. We're in a much more positive position than many other authorities and continue to do well to maintain our finances, but we will remain extra vigilant and stay focused on our goal of achieving long-term financial stability.
Renovations and restorations are underway at the Cholsey and Wallingford Railway to be unveiled later this year. The former Great Western Railway branch line, which runs heritage steam and diesel trains, has started construction of a pitched roof on columns in the garden area, designed to resemble a GWR-style canopy when finished. Whilst new beams have already been erected, trusses are still being delivered and completion is expected by late March. Work at the site is also continuing on one of the British Rail Mark I standard carriages. Press officer Jonathan Dart explained the carriage was one of the first built in its batch. He said, "Most heritage railways have Mark I standards. This was a 1951 version built in Swindon that we're working to restore to its original look." Mr. Dart also confirmed the centre was looking to reopen an on-site museum and the carriage together, and is welcoming of new volunteers.
The City Council has prioritised flowers over hardship funding in setting its budget for the 2024-25 year. Oxford councillors faced tough choices in the four-hour meeting as amendments to the original budget motion were tabled unsuccessfully by three parties across the chamber. The Labour-controlled council decided to absorb most of the Liberal Democrat proposals, prompting the party to withdraw their proposed amendment. Flowers formed a large part of the discussion, with some parties believing that planned decoration at Frideswyde Square should be replaced with investment into other initiatives. A Green Group amendment wanted to introduce a hardship fund for those hit hardest by the cost of living, and said it would finance this by removing investment in flower beds at St. Frideswyde Square in the centre of Oxford and introducing increased charges for park and ride services. Concern was raised about the trade-off, however, and the amendment was rejected. Party leader Chris Jarvis said, "The administration's budget also hinges on increasing car parking charges by a lesser amount. In previous budget rounds, you have supported a hardship fund. An amendment from the independent group called for a council tax decrease, though objectors criticised the methods of reduction. It proposed to finance this through closing public toilets." Mr. Jarvis said he supported the thrust of the amendment, but concurred that with Liberal Democrat group leader Dr. Chris Mountain in thinking public toilets are incredibly important. The Oxford Socialist Independence Group also took out spending on flower beds at Frideswyde in their amendment and sought more advice centres to help with the cost of living. Jabu Nala Hartley of the Barton and Sandhills ward said, "The inequality in our city is rampant. Advice centres are a bone of what is happening in the city." Councillor Catherine Miles had also questioned the need for such a lot of flower beds when you can pop down to the garden centre. Lye Valley ward councillor Ajaz Raymond said, "Locally, when people are suffering, you cannot say that flower beds for 1 year is going to make a difference to what people think of Oxford." The Chamber rejected the Oxford Socialist Independence Amendment. Carfax and Jericho Ward Councillor Sam Hollingsworth suggested flower beds only represented a small portion of the budget. "I hope that will put it in context," he said. The budget was passed with the flower bed expense included, some councillors abstained from the vote. Council leader Susan Brown said, "We are continuing to provide the services so sorely needed by Oxford residents. I'm proud of our great city. Today we are delivering a budget that stands up for our city and our citizens." Dr. Smouten added, "The vast majority of our budget amendment is absorbed into the Labour Group's budget amendment. Genuinely, thank you for doing that."
A multi-storey car park in Abingdon town centre should be demolished, according to a leading councillor. The upper levels of the car park in the Charter are currently out of use because of structural concerns, according to the Vale Council. Neil Fawcett, County for Abingdon South, who also represents Abingdon on the Vale of Whitehorse District Council and the Town Council, said it was now time for the car park in the Charter to be demolished. The Council's website says Level 3 and upwards are closed. The lower levels of the Charter car park are open, but Levels 3 and upwards are closed until further notice due to concerns regarding structural issues and fire safety. While the lower levels remain open, space is very limited, so we're encouraging motorists to use the other car parks in Abingdon where there is good capacity. Mr. Fawcett said the car park should be demolished as part of plans to redevelop the town centre, including the Charter. Following public consultation, a series of development options have been drawn up by the Vale Council in a special report called the Central Abingdon Regeneration Framework, the CARF. Mr. Fawcett said, "I think the multi-storey car park should be demolished. Cars can't park on the upper levels because there are concerns about the structure. I believe there are signs of concrete decay." The CARF document looks at two slightly different sets of options for the Charter, but both would involve the demolition of buildings, including the multi-storey car park. One option suggests demolishing the Charter, plus units in Bury Street North, and clearing the site for a five-storey development. New library facilities would be provided on the site, while health and social care facilities would be relocated. A budget hotel could also feature in the proposals. In the second option, healthcare facilities would be included on site. The library in the Charter is one of the most popular in the county. A previous plan to move it was abandoned. Mr. Fawcett added, "There could be a mixture of housing, retail and improved health and library services. The Charter is long overdue for a revamp. The challenge will be in the economic situation and how we find businesses to invest, but this is a growing town with high employment." The introduction to the CARF report, which also considers other areas of the town centre which could be improved, says, "Over recent years, Central Abingdon has declined somewhat in relation to its retail offer, popularity, and in respect of part of the public realm and ability to move around." Mr. Fawcett said, "Vale Council officers were now considering options for redevelopment of the town centre, and a report would be discussed by the Vale Cabinet later this year."
The number of fines handed out to drivers in Thames Valley for using their mobile phones at the wheel has more than doubled following an update to the law, new figures show. The AA said the tightening of the law has driven the substantial rise in offences across England and Wales, but also attributed the increased use of dash cams for helping catch drivers using their mobiles. Home Office figures show Thames Valley Police handed out 944 fixed penalty notices to people for driving while using a handheld device in 2022. This was up from 430 the year before, although people's travel behaviour in 2021 was affected by the coronavirus pandemic. Nevertheless, 2022 levels remained above 2019, when 920 FPNs were issued. Nationally, the number of FPNs handed out by all police forces, excluding the British Transport Police, rose by 34% from 2019 to 38,000 in 2022. In 2021, just 20,000 FPNs were issued, with every police force bar one seeing an increase the following year. This is likely due to a change in the law in March 2022. Previously, the law stated drivers were guilty of an offence when using the handheld device for interactive communication. But this was updated to incorporate any use. An offence carries a minimum £200 fine and 6 points on the driver's licence. Jack Cousins, head of roads policy at the AA, said, "We need drivers to hang up their handsets rather than play with their phones, as well as police forces scheduling targeted enforcement events. The rise in privately owned dash cams means drivers are more likely to be caught handling their mobile phone. The reality is that someone is always watching. The best way to deter illegal driving behaviours is to increase the number of traffic officers and have a visible presence on our roads." The fine was paid for 565, 60% of the FPNs handed out in Thames Valley. Court action was required in a further 336, 36%.
The most fabulous farm on the planet, nestled in West Oxfordshire, has been deemed one of the places to be this Easter. Dalesford Farm, near Kingham, has been named by the Times newspaper as one of the best destinations to visit for anyone who wishes to elevate their Easter. With spring just around the corner, they rounded up locations with the bluebells, bunnies and egg hunts that are worth planning for. Sunday roasts, egg hunts, a lounge about through a country garden, Easter has it all. The celebrity farm shop, frequented by the Beckhams, Jeremy Clarkson, Richard E. Grant and Harry and Meghan, is known far and wide for being posh. The Times review reads, "For those who wish to elevate their Easter, a trip to Dalesford, surely the most fabulous farm on the planet, with restaurants, a spa and an eye-wateringly expensive farm shop on site, is in order. Day classes include lessons in Easter table laying, Sunday roast cookery and spring flower arranging. If you're happy to get your Hunter Wellies dirtier than that on March the 30th, take the lambing tour given by resident shepherds, which includes a ride on the tractor trailer and an introduction to ewes and new offspring in the barns. There will also be an Easter egg hunt for under 12s, as well as other egg-centric events, such as Meet Peter Rabbit, an egg and spoon race, and hot cross buns for sale. Continue the Dalesford theme with a stay at one of its three pubs with rooms, the Fox, the Bell or the Wild Rabbit. The Fox is closest to Dalesford Farm, just a mile away."
Oxford's Bodleian Library has been named as one of the most popular in the world. The Bodleian Library ranked as the fourth most popular globally and the most popular in Europe, receiving more than 1 million Wikipedia page views and 40,500 monthly Google searches. The Oxford Institution surpassed other European libraries with its digital popularity. Sylvia Johnson, a language expert at Preply, who compiled the list, said, "In recognition of World Book Day, our research highlights there is a universal love and appreciation for libraries and books across the globe." The other libraries were Library of Congress in Washington, D.C., the New York Public Library, the Boston Public Library and Wibblingen Monastery Library in Ulm, Germany.
Plans are well underway for this year's Whitney Carnival, which will take place on Saturday, July the 13th. The theme is children's TV through the ages, with floats urged to use as much bunting and flags as possible to create a carnival atmosphere. There will be two £50 prizes for the best walking group and float. In addition, all vehicles and foot entries, groups or individuals, will receive a certificate in recognition of their participation and support. The carnival is organised by the Rotary Club of Whitney, Whitney Lions, Whitney Round Table and the Air Training Corps. The procession, as in previous years, will leave the Lees at 11 a.m, proceeding along Church Green, left into Corn Street, right into Holloway Road, right into Welch Way, right into High Street, then left into the Market Square, and returning along Church Green to the Lees. Procession lead David Lord said, "In spite of the dreadful weather last year, it was our biggest and best procession. Let's make it even better this year." To take part in the procession, call David on 01993 881 862.
And that was the last item for this week. Please note there is now a new telephone number for you to ring if you have any comments about this week's Oxtalk edition. Please ring 07 496 062 280 and leave your name and contact details as well as your message. Alternatively, you can email mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and previous editions are available on our website www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen or download. Thank you very much for listening.